This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What are we doing today, Katie?
Talking about Dr. Feelgood Part 2.
Yes, I'm excited.
It is time. We are in the time machine once again, so we are, you know, a little bit, we're recording early, trying to get ahead, because when this comes out, I will officially be in school, so I am a busy, busy bee.
That is so exciting. Oh my god.
Dude, school starts in 6 days. My first class is in 6 days
from today. Oh my god, you're going back to school.
So, back to school time. But yeah, we're talking Max Jacobson today, part two, when the bad doctor comes out. But before we get into that, do you have any updates?
A little, I don't know, corrections corner thing or okay. Adding on to something. Remember how in my Hawaii update episode, you asked me if the Navy released the video or if it was leaked?
Mm-hmm.
The Navy released it.
Oh, fascinating.
Which is even more embarrassing, but I'm glad they did.
I mean, they might have tried to be like, be accountable or whatever, but yeah, but I still don't trust that this is the full story that they're giving us ever. So, you know.
There were soil samples done to see if there was PFAS in the soil, and I'll have to come back with you for the for real update on that with the actual numbers okay. If I can find them, but there was PFAS present.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, as we knew there obviously. Would be.
I mean, I don't have an update on it, but I know shit is happening again with Havana Syndrome.
So. Oh, yes! Yes, I did see a few articles.
Gotta get on that update for y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like it's happening again.
Yes. I feel like because we've both had so much going on personally that I feel like we haven't addressed a lot of public things that are happening in the news and shit. Shit's like you're crazy right now. But
we really haven't.
I would hope that our listeners know where we stand on things, but just to have to say it again. Or just to say it again and put it out there, trans people are humans and deserve every right. And what's happening in like Tennessee and other states, Florida, it's fucking wild.
Insane.
Ron DeSantis is a fucking fascist and everything that's happening in Florida is terrifying.
We support the writers of the writer's strike 100%.
All of the fucking mass shootings are absolutely fucking insane. I think we all understand that. And I would hope that people know where we stand on things like this. Just yes. Jesus fucking Christ, there's so much happening in the world. It can be very overwhelming.
A lot of times we just kind of push through all of that to get to whatever our topic is, because if we don't, the whole episode will just be what the fuck is going on in this world.
Yes.
As my entire therapy session was this morning. Like, it's a crazy world out there, y'all.
This timeline is weird.
I hate it. I hate this time.
If we tried to address everything that's happening individually, we'd literally have to make like a 4-part fucking episode.
Yeah.
If you follow us on social media, I do try to share a lot in our stories of things yeah. that are happening when I see it. So I'll try to be like a little bit better about that just to use our platform to get those messages out there.
You will also get some pretty unfiltered thoughts of mine on Twitter.
Katie is in charge of the Twitter. That is not me.
If anyone ever has any question, comments, concerns about the Twitter, you can direct those right to my asshole. I don't care. Those are my unfiltered thoughts. That's what Twitter is for.
You.
Take it up with me on Twitter and I'll get back to you when I'm ready for it. But if you ever have anything to say about our Twitter comments, literally leave Ashley alone about that. Unless you're telling her how jealous you are that her best friend is so hilarious. Those are fine. You can say that to her.
That's Twitter is definitely your format.
I do really well in limited characters. Put the pressure on me and I just work. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, just wanted to like reiterate where we stand on certain things. Because I know, especially after our JFK series, it got a little weird on TikTok. It really did. And there's a couple reviews on Apple Podcasts that I'm like, you really only came here for the JFK content because you're into some kind of conspiracy.
I still need to design stickers that say insufferably woke because
yes! From that one fucking review.
One star review, insufferably woke, ruins the episodes. Yeah, yeah. It's sometimes nice to just do a good purge of any QAnon assholes who are still listening for some reason.
For some reason.
Go away. We don't even want your hate listens.
Yeah. I'm okay without them. There's been so much going on recently and so much going on in our own personal lives that I felt like, you know, we just needed to put that back out there.
And if you have questions about how we feel about everything that's going on with Taylor Swift, direct you to our TikToks.
Please message us. We're ready for conversations about this.
We really are. Fuck Matt Healy. So, we ready to go forward with today's episode?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready to talk about an asshole?
Yes. Oh my god, more Nazis. God damn it.
Fuck.
So where we left off, Max Jacobson just set up his practice in Manhattan and he's attracting big name patients. He's still under the main focus of treating patients and not like perfecting medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So his whole thing is like, how are my patients feeling? How do they feel good? And not like, oh, you know, is their fever gone forever?
Yeah.
Max believed in using small amounts, quote, small amounts of methamphetamine. But for him, small meant 20 milligrams, which was five times the recommended dose.
Good Lord. Wow.
Now, I just want to throw out there that everyone loves to shit all over Max Jacobson for being Miracle Meth Head Max, who ruined everyone's lives. But what he considered small, and everyone else freaks out about being big, was not anywhere near the 40 milligrams prescribed by everyday doctors for people dealing with alcohol addiction.
Yay!
Let's not pretend like doctors everywhere weren't like, yes, do some meth about all of your problems. It's amazing. Doctors were prescribing other doctors methamphetamines for their fatigue. It isn't just a Max thing, the way that everyone loves to present this. There's no DEA to care about any of this shit yet, so the methamphetamines that Max are giving out is perfectly legal for this time. Right now, Max isn't doing anything wrong, quote, outside of self-sampling, meaning he's unable to look at his data unbiasedly. But self-testing wasn't just a Max thing either. He learned that behavior. I want to start with all of that because I'm about to spend a lot of time really harping on some horrible fucking things that happen, but he gets blamed for a lot of this stuff. Like, he's the only person who was doing this.
Yeah, when there's, you know, so many other doctors doing it.
It was a lot of people. He took it to a whole other level, and that's all him.
And he also worked with very famous people, so of course mm-hmm. he's going to be more talked about.
Yes, and he's also adding, like, animal blood. That's all him.
That's crossing a line.
People are always focusing on the methamphetamines as if, like, that's the craziest part. And I'm like, dude, everyone was on methamphetamine at the time. Like, don't pretend like that was just him. It was everyone. As Ashley said, one of the major differences about Max was the high profile of his patients and the other shit he was adding to the shots. Hormones, vitamin B complex, steroids, vitamins A, E, D, C, and Novocaine.
Novocaine?
Novocaine. I'll get to it in 1 second. He's also adding something called Envitol, which got rid of physical and mental fatigue and depression. Essentially, what Jacobson was doing was adding different things that would treat the negative side effects of the methamphetamine without messing around with it so much that it loses its high.
That is bonkers.
So Novocaine, for example, is not just going to numb your face. It numbs the spot it's injected.
Yeah.
So when you're, you know, shooting up crazy stuff, your injection site's gonna fucking hurt.
Oh.
But not if there's Novocaine in it.
What?
You just feel good.
Yeah.
And you don't get the mania, the crash. Not exactly.
This is crazy.
Right? Another huge problem is that the injections he's giving himself cause delusions.
Oh.
And because of his delusions, he truly believed that adding all of these things to the shots changed the way the methamphetamines worked in the body versus when it was taken by itself. He thought things were changing, not that he was covering up the bad things that were happening.
Oh.
And that's the meth talking.
Yeah.
It's also really important to note before we continue that each patient he saw had a different recipe tailored to their issues. Not everyone was getting the same exact amounts of each thing. because of this, we'll never know exactly what each of his patients were getting and can merely speculate and comment on some of their behavior and some of the paperwork that we have information on. Okay, so back to his practice. It's crazy, dude. It's the early 1940s, and more refugees from Europe are finding their way to the U.S., through New York City, including many of Max's old patients. His practice is growing rapidly amongst artists, musicians, writers, who happen to be the elite of New York City. More and more wealthy people catch wind of this miracle worker, and they want a piece of what he has to offer. It's around the same time in the early 1940s that Max connects with a woman, Nina Hagen, who was a patient he had treated as a young teen and a woman who had now recently immigrated to the U.S. Nina fell in love with Max.
Oh,
I say it that way because Max says he fell in love with her when they first met when she was a young teenager and he was her married adult doctor.
Oh, no.
Anyway, no. They get married in 1946 and have a daughter, Jill, who's born the next year. 1946 is the same year that Jacobson creates the Corporation for the, quote, Constructive Research Foundation, which still exists today.
Oh.
It's a nonprofit research medical company that he said was for researching and ultimately curing neuromuscular diseases like MS. What it really was a company he used to purchase the materials he made the injections with. While he had previously had hospital privileges in New York, he had lost them in 1946 because the medical administration determined his treatments to be irregular.
You think?
So, right off the bat, the hospital's kind of looking at him and being like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I don't know about all this.
Yikes. So if any of his patients needed hospital care or surgery, he had to refer them to someone else who could go into the hospital and treat them. That didn't stop any of his high-profile clients of the time.
That's crazy, because I would be like, that's a major red flag.
Mm-hmm. Didn't stop any of them from stopping by his office to grab their very favorite pick-me-ups. That's addiction. Dr. Leslie Iverson says that Jacobson didn't write down or substantiate his research or his observation, which means that he wasn't publishing any scholarly articles, and his scientific process of experimentation with his medicines were basically nothing. This is a huge leap from the dude who was working on a research team for different medicines and studying the impacts they had on the bloodstream in the body. That might be the most scientific thing I've said in a while, because at this point in his career, Max is really truly just doing whatever he wants.
Oh my god.
His continual self-medicating has really started to take a toll on his thought process, clearly, and his concern for morality, all on top of a long-term lack of sleep that doing methamphetamines naturally causes. I've said a couple times that Max's patients have begun to grow in numbers, but let's talk about how that happened so quickly. Max was doing okay at meeting high-level clients through the process of word of mouth, but everything changed when he met Milton Blackstone in the 1940s. Milton was a show promoter and frequent guest of a resort in the Catskills, so frequent that him and the owner became good friends. With this friendship and connections to performers in the city, he made the Grossinger Resort the up-and-coming spot of the area. So he had a way of like getting all of these people gigs and shows at like a great resort for people to perform in outside of the city. So once all of these people wanted to work with him and then he became a patient of Max Jacobson, he was just feeding patients to Max from there.
Wow.
Milton was thrilled by the effects of these vitamin shots and began sending anyone and everyone he knew with any ailment to Max. And you best believe that his shots made you feel great. Whatever bothered you didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yikes. Max would have runners, which is my word choices, not the sources, wanna be clear, pick up preloaded vials from his office and bring them to Blackstone for Blackstone to distribute to his clients. That's just selling drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're just a drug dealer.
Everything about this is awful.
Yeah. One of Blackstone's clients was Debbie Reynolds' husband, Eddie Fisher, father to the most incredible woman in the world, Carrie Fisher.
Yep.
He also did some other things too. He was a singer who sold millions of records and had a TV show that he hosted, The Eddie Fisher Show, and was the husband of Debbie Reynolds, who was also on The Injections, as well as her best friend Elizabeth Taylor, who had a terrifying experience on the drugs while filming Cleopatra.
Oh no.
And I know we talked about Cleopatra in the Marilyn Monroe episode and about how they were very behind on filming. Part of me wonders if that's
why, you know, if that's part of
one of the reasons they're so behind, because Elizabeth Taylor did a bunch of methamphetamine and freaked out. Everyone surrounding Eddie Fisher was using these drugs, and Eddie himself said that he looked up to Max like a father figure.
Oh, that's a weird father figure.
Yikes. Milton encouraged Eddie and Max to connect, which led Jacobson to providing Eddie with, quote, as many special injections as it took to keep him going, end quote. Rod Sterling of The Twilight Zone was also a patient of Jacobson, and he quickly became addicted to the methamphetamines.
Well, did he have any part? Was he like a producer in the show too? And did he have any say in how those episodes went? Because...
Bro, he wrote it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that entire show makes so much more sense now. Everything about that makes so much more sense.
Cool. Good to know.
The night when Marilyn Monroe famously sang Happy Birthday to the President at Madison Square Garden in 1962, Max Jacobson had previously shot her up.
Mm-hmm.
The singer Harry Belafonte lost his sight temporarily after a single dose.
Oh, shit.
And like, do you think it was the meth or the animal blood?
Or an overload of vitamins. Who knows?
Or a vitamin overdose. Yeah.
Oh my God. The famous
Cecil B. DeMille had a long running relationship with Jacobson and his shots. The two met while Cecil was working on the movie The Ten Commandments in 1954. DeMille was over budget, behind, struggling, old, and stressed as shit. And what do you think that all adds up to? A heart attack. He flew Dr. Jacobson to Egypt to work with the local doctor who was already there taking care of him. And both of them were like, you gotta chill for a month. But the director said, no way. Every day, gotta be hustling, gotta do this. I will not stop moving, and I will be on set tomorrow. So you guys need to figure out how I can do that. The two doctors worked out a plan together that would allow him to continue working on set with as little physical stress as possible. People would start, like, carrying him around everywhere.
Basically. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, bro, just stay home.
The literal next line in the book Dr. Feelgood by Richard A. Lertzman was, quote, and as long as the director was high off methamphetamine, it worked, end quote. That is not heart healthy, my dudes.
Oh my God. What the fuck?
No, bro, that is not working. Everyone on set started getting sick from dysentery.
Oh!
The director's solution? Max's meth shots. What's the motto of this episode? Not feeling well? Do some meth. The dependence that DeMille had on these drugs were out of control. The point where everywhere that DeMille went and had to go to promote this movie, he insisted that Jacobson went with him. Before I move on to talk about other patients, I'll note that Cecil B. DeMille went on to suffer from several more heart attacks and passed away in 1959. Dr. Jacobson administered increasingly large injections to Tennessee Williams as a treatment for his depression. Because amphetamines gave him insomnia, he gave Williams Seconal, the very drug whose abuse eventually contributed to Williams' death. Another patient was an actor who starred in an episode of The Twilight Zone in the 60s, Bob Cummings, who was fully addicted to the shots by the time he did that episode.
Wow.
Bob was an incredible actor who starred in Academy Award-winning films, I just needed to include this, the most homoerotic scene to ever hit the screen with Ronald Reagan, Hitchcock movies, and more. He was beyond beloved. The addiction that he had to these drugs was kept secret for over 50 years.
Wow. How?
Oh, just wait. People believe that the best connection for the doctor and Cummings was through Rosemary Clooney. Yes. Of that family, the aunt of Georgie Boy. The relationship with Jacobson and his medicine destroyed Bob Cummings' life. So we're going to kind of talk about what went on. Oh yeah, so he was just like living his life. But the clinical depression that often follows the frequent use of methamphetamines impacted Bob Cummings immensely. As the son of a physician, he was very, very well read on the subject of vitamins and health. But the impact of the shots were too good to pass up, and he quickly became addicted. So he went into this being like, look, I know what vitamins do. I know about medicine, and I know that what you're saying is too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacobson was like, just try it. I promise you're going to feel better. And he felt so much better that Cummings kind of pushed away the logic.
Yeah.
And was like, but this just feels so good. I can't stop.
Oh, that's so dangerous.
Through extreme use of methamphetamines, Bob became erratic and was going above and beyond the dose that he had been told to take. It was getting to the point where he started shooting himself up in the ankles. So there was never any physical signs that he was an intravenous drug user. But Cummings' drug abuse and subsequent career collapse were the factors in his divorces from his third wife, Mary, and fourth wife, Gina Fong. When Jacobson was no longer offering the drug in the 70s due to legal troubles that I'm going to get to, Cummings developed his own drug concoctions based in the Bahamas. So he was so addicted that he started asking people in the Bahamas to make him his own methamphetamine.
Jesus Christ.
He then was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and was forced to move into a home for indigent actors in Hollywood.
There is a home for actors in Hollywood. I feel like I shouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, of course there is.
Wow. Interesting.
There's this whole thing about how they end up picking him a wife through fan mail, and they pick this woman, and she like comes to meet him and thinks that she's gonna get married to, you know, Bob Cummings, who she's like in love with. But what she really sees is a very old, drug-addicted, wheelchair-bound man with Parkinson's.
Wow.
And she begins to abuse him. It's, like, really fucking sad.
Oh, my God.
But that kind of deserves its own episode, and, like, that's its own thing.
Yeah.
But the way that these shots impacted these people for life cannot be undersaid. Like, it is so... The things that happen to these people who thought they were getting medical treatment...
Yeah.
...is so fucking sad. Like, so fucking sad. We have officially entered the time in which JFK is introduced to Dr. Jacobson. We are now on page 17 of the notes, and we're only getting... Like, we're just now getting to what he is most known for. It was just before the 1960 presidential debate that we talked about in the JFK series that the two were introduced. I even said in our episode during that debate about how incredible JFK came off compared to Nixon, and I attributed all of that to JFK's like upbringing. And it turns out, upon further look, that it wasn't just that, but before that filming, he was shot up with Jacobson's special injections.
Wow, that was the
first time he ever took Jacobson's med. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's wild.
I had no idea. It's insane. It was Chuck Spalding, JFK's old college roommate, who introduced the two. The thing is, as I noted before, the CIA and FBI already had a ton of eyes on Jacobson because of all of his connections to known Soviet agents. But he wasn't just treating them now. He was also treating known CIA and OSS operative and Kennedy family photographer Mark Shaw. Adding JFK to the list, the soon-to-be fucking president of the United States sent up huge red flags. If you're looking for a really deep dive, obviously check out our JFK episodes, but I feel like if you're here listening to this right now, you probably have. If you're a first-time listener, welcome, and I'm sorry. By the time he becomes president, JFK is fully hooked on Jacobson's shots. Much like DeMille, JFK had Jacobson travel with him everywhere. The Secret Service were super fucking concerned about this. Not only for the drugs that the sickly president was getting, but because the FBI files noted that his clients worshipped Jacobson. To have the US president under someone's thumb like that isn't really giving democracy. And what the fuck is JF gonna do while he's traveling around the world being shot up in the neck with methamphetamines? How are these vitamins in animal blood gonna mess with this super sickly dude? I cannot stress enough that I feel like everyone is always so focused on the methamphetamine of it all, but I'm over here wondering what viruses and shit he made by injecting animal blood into humans.
Yeah.
Like, how are we not more concerned about that? Didn't this happen, like, right... Dude, this happened... I'm serious, though. This happened in the 60s and 70s, and then the AIDS epidemic happened. How are people not talking about this?
Yeah.
Right after two decades of hundreds of people being shot up with animal blood, all of a sudden AIDS exists? Like... Are you fucking kidding me?
It is unhinged behavior.
It's time in the story for the Vienna Summit. For those of you who don't know, it's a meeting in Vienna, Austria, between President John F. Kennedy and the first secretary, Nikita Khrushchev, of the Soviet Union. The two leaders of the superpowers of the Cold Era discussed numerous issues in the relationship between their countries. We're talking Cold War, Bay of Pigs just happened, the US looks fucking horrible and weak, but Kennedy doesn't really care because he thinks that he has these super secret shots to gain an edge in the conversation. He's like, I've got this, I'm gonna feel great, he won't be able to knock me, you know, he won't be able to knock me down because I've got this backing me up. Mm-hmm. A couple nights before the summit, Max Jacobson's room is broken into and his vials of stuff and files of things are thrown everywhere around the room. It was undeniably the KGB who had broken into the Paris hotel room, and they had just learned a lot about Kennedy through Max's treatment.
Shit.
With this knowledge in the hand of the Soviets, Kennedy lost his edge and any notion of strength completely.
Wow. Wow.
JFK secured an early morning meeting with Jacobson before the summit to get his little AM meth boost to hold him through what was going to be a long conversation. However, Khrushchev, for whatever reason, showed up hours late. So late that he just happened to get there as the first shot was wearing off.
Oh no.
Throughout this meeting, JFK would ask for more and more shots, and Jacobson, while worried of overdosing him, gave them. With modern eyes now, we can say the meeting didn't go well.
Yeah, yeah.
But for a little bit, the meeting was seen as a win, which is very odd. Or here's a quote of how it's talked about now. Quote, in retrospect, the summit may be seen as a failure. The two leaders became increasingly frustrated at the lack of progress of negotiations. Kennedy later said Khrushchev, quote, he beat the hell out of me, he told the New York Times reporter James Scotty Resden immediately afterwards. It was the worst thing of my life. He savaged me.
Wow.
Right? Not good.
Also, like, I can't believe you admitted that.
That's how bad it was. On the other hand, Khrushchev viewed the summit in a much more positive light. In his memoir, he showed ambivalence, writing, I was generally pleased with our meeting in Vienna. Even though we came to no concrete agreement, I could tell that Kennedy was interested in finding a peaceful solution to the world's problems and avoiding conflict with the Soviet Union. However, historian William Taubman suggests that he merely felt he could push Kennedy around. It's not good.
Wow.
I cannot stress enough how dependent on these meds that JFK had become. Not only was he getting shots from Jacobson, but he was also self-injecting on top of self-injecting Provocaine.
What is that?
It's a local anesthetic and painkiller.
Okay.
And he was getting another form of painkiller from a different doctor.
Oh my lord.
From Medical Bag in 2013, JFK's addiction almost exploded into a national crisis with his naked romp at the Carlyle Hotel in 1962,
when
he suffered a serious psychotic reaction to the drugs, ending in a manic condition and furiously waving his arms around, running without any clothes on.
Like in his hotel suite or like just in the fucking hallway of the hotel? Like details I need to know. Oh my lord.
Both. They ended up having to call Jacobson, who injected him, and they had to give him an antipsychotic drug.
Wow.
Like he had a full mental fucking breakdown.
That's fucking crazy.
That
was our president.
That was our president. Yeah.
That was our president. Jesus Christ.
Author of Dr. Feelgood, Richard A. Lertzman, points to his overuse of amphetamines as the reason for his reckless behavior, loose lips, and overactive libido. He also says that it's that behavior that led to the need for the CIA to assassinate him. I personally think that that's a really big jump. I don't think that they assassinated Kennedy because he was using meth.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why someone who wants to sell some books would try and make that argument.
Oh yeah, I could see that for sure. It's the shock value.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what?
Yeah, like, no. No. In 1964, Jacobson's own wife, Nina, died. Many accused him of killing her with an overdose, as she was also a longtime user of these shots.
Oh,
and
boy.
When she died, she was described as, quote, as thin as my pinky finger, end quote, by a family friend. Like, it's crazy to think that this was just going on for years and powerful people are dying. Like, everywhere this guy is, fucked up shit is happening.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's a lot of eyes on him and a lot of bad stuff happening, but no repercussions.
Mm-hmm. Like, how long are you gonna watch him do bad shit for before you do something about it?
Right? So that's kind of how I, like, went into my research when I was like, why did it take so long for them to look into this guy? Like, what the fuck? So it was around the 1960s that the Federal Bureau of Dangerous Narcotics and Drugs begins investigating Max and his practices. While looking through the information on this guy, who's seen hanging out with almost anyone who's everyone, like anyone who's anyone, they realize that a lot of the methamphetamines and amphetamines that Max ordered through his research foundation were entirely unaccounted for.
Oh boy.
They're like, so we have this paperwork. Where does it go?
What do you do with it?
And that made me realize that they're like in the time period of like literal paperwork.
That must have been a painful process.
So they had to like look through everything, and it takes a while to collect information and get warrants and all of this stuff. But they're finally able to raid Max's office in 1969.
Nice.
The office's condition was described as, quote, beyond unsanitary, end quote.
Oh god.
I mean, it was so gross and so bad that they were like, I'm pretty sure we can press charges for how disgusting this doctor's office is. Like, I'm pretty sure it is criminally gross.
And I'm like, and that's where he injects people with needles
and makes the shots.
Yeah.
We get conflicting reports here because several of Jacobson's patients say that they had reported him to different agencies because of severe reactions to the shots.
Mm-hmm. Just like valid.
Totally. Absolutely. That's what you should do. And a few of them said that they called the American Medical Association over nervous breakdowns caused from either overdoses or, you know, nervous breakdowns that required long-term hospital stays. Like,
Jesus.
Just like, they're like, hey, shit is happening and it's not good. But because it's 1969 and there are no real regulations regarding the use and distribution of amphetamines, they couldn't really do anything.
Damn.
About what he was doing.
That sucks.
Right? That same year, Kennedy photographer, CIA agent, and long-term patient of Jacobson, Mark Shaw, dies. Originally, his death is labeled as a heart attack. And they call up Jacobson, and he's like, yes, my patient had like a history of heart troubles and heart disease. This makes perfect sense. How unfortunate, very sad. But an autopsy revealed that all of his organs were covered in methamphetamine. And the cause of death was changed to acute and chronic intravenous amphetamine poisoning. He was only 47 when he died.
Oh my god.
And had no history of heart disease or heart damage.
They're like, somebody's a liar.
And while all of this is weird, it wasn't necessarily damning. Accusations were made by Mark Shaw's ex-wife that Jacobson had purposely murdered Shaw and Jacobson's own wife, Nina, because the two of them had an affair. While these accusations were looked into, they never led to formal charges.
I mean...
But, like...
He was just fucking around with meds. Nothing was consistent, so he could have just...
Could have done anything.
Fucking done anything with that.
Yeah.
Wow. Not an affair.
I know. In 1970, amphetamine use by civilians became illegal thanks to the Controlled Substances Act. And now government agencies were controlling and regulating the use of the drug. While all of this really started because of Max Jacobson, none of it made him back down. Instead, he had the audacity to go before a House summit and insist that use of methamphetamines was the only way to cure heroin addiction.
What? Sir, get out of here.
Right?
Get out of here.
That didn't do anything because he looked unhinged and insane.
It'll give you a meth addiction, that's for sure.
Yeah, like you can trade your addictions.
You'll still be addicted.
You're still addicted to drugs, though. Wow. It's just one your doctor is giving you instead.
Wow.
Weird. Okay. The next step in the downfall of Miracle Max Jacobson started with his sometimes assistant, Harvey Mann. Harvey went on to tell the New York Times about Max and all of the shots given to high-profile patients. It just so happened that while he was doing this, the New York Times had already been looking into the claims of high-profile politicians being hooked on Jacobson's methamphetamine shots. This is where we get his story, Harvey's story,
yeah,
from author A.E. Hotchner's Choice People, The Greats, Near Greats, and Ingrates I Have Known. Harvey Mann exposes the entire story from the beginning about how he was first taken to Jacobson when he was 14 years old for a bad cold, and how seeing Jacobson felt like, quote, being in the presence of God. End quote.
14 for a cold, 14, and he gave him meth.
And he gave him methamphetamine shots.
Oh my God.
He explained that Jacobson never examined him or any of the other patients he saw in the office while he was working there in his 20s.
Sheesh.
Jacobson promised, quote, I'll make you look like an actor.
What?
When he was in his 20s, Mann began working for Jacobson full time. He had no medical training whatsoever and was still injecting patients, working on testing new medicine, all under the permission of Max Jacobson.
Wow. Wow. This is wild.
Yeah. There was a time where Max started injecting Harvey with beef bone marrow and other things that included the injection of eel cells.
What?
That caused him years of pain. Like, he just injected cow bone marrow into his bone.
What the fuck?
Yeah, like,
I have no words.
Shit. Harvey provided more examples of extreme delusion, like the time that Max shot both of them up, then tore off Harvey's glasses, broke them, and said that he would have perfect eyesight forever now.
Okay, fuck you, asshole. Glasses are expensive.
Like, that's how delusional Max Jacobson had become.
Yeah, that's
so off his fucking rocker.
Wild.
Man not only had proof of his importance, but also had intense details about some of the famous patients that had been seen. Like the time the two of them had injected cartilage into famous musician Harvey Levan Van Cliburn, who had an infected cuticle.
What?
So Van Cliburn goes to Jacobson for an infected cuticle. They give him a, quote, treatment, which I feel fucking disgusting saying, and inject cartilage into the infected cuticle area.
That's really weird, bro.
The finger blows up twice the size of his wrist.
Oh my God, how'd your finger like not explode? What the fuck?
The doctors at the hospital said had they waited another hour, they would have had to remove the entire finger, if not the whole hand.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Dude, there's so much of an easier way to go about fixing a fucking cuticle. Are you kidding me?
Not if you're a mad scientist who's been injecting methamphetamine for
Certainly
decades.
Not. Certainly
you know,
not.
Like, he has come so far from the little kid who was throwing coins across.
I mean,
to this.
Wow.
Mann talked about how day and night Max's office would be filled with people because, quote, speed people can't sleep. They would just be high all the time, end quote. Harvey Mann confirmed the Vienna summit visits and said that he had proof. As if all of this wasn't bad enough, Mann had more to say. He spoke of Max's own addiction to his shots, how he had to shoot up every few hours, that he had done it so much, he was hard-pressed to find a vein, and that he had yet to blow out from over-injecting. Almost every vein he could access was blown out.
Only imagine what his, like, tolerance grew to be like, also. Like, the fact that he definitely had to keep upping his doses because his body was probably getting used to it at certain points.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Harvey knew addiction all too well, as he was once taken to the hospital for amphetamine poisoning himself. He said that as soon as he was let out of the hospital, he went right back to Max. Like, that is how powerful the addiction was.
Sheesh.
Mann entered AA, but was still craving the shots, and said, that was something that never left. Quote, I'm still getting used to a life without the crutch of Max's shots, which he said like towards the end of his life. It had been years since he had done it and he was still getting used to it. Late September of 1972, a high-ranking source tipped off the New York Times that the vice president, Sparrow T. Agnew, was a patient of Dr. Feelgood. True reporters... What?
I'm so sorry? Is that the name of the vice president of the United States?
That was, yes.
Okay, okay. Well, listen, I don't know every name for every president. And if I don't know every name for every president, I certainly don't know every name for every vice president. But I just need you to say that name one more time for me because...
Sparrow T. Agnew.
Incredible. Sparrow.
Right? It's fucking dope.
That was the vice president. Okay, continue. I just... You said it so fast and my brain went, what? Huh? What? What's that name? No, I love it.
Am I on methamphetamine? So they get this report at the New York Times and two reporters are like, okay, what the fuck? That's crazy. Let's go check that out. So they did. And when they got there, just like as reporters, Max Jacobson was like, oh my God, yes, come in. Let me give you a tour. Because he was so wrapped up in his delusions, he didn't realize that these investigators were here to like talk about how bad he was. He was like, oh my God, they're here because I'm amazing and they want to talk about how I'm amazing.
Oh my God.
So he just gave them a tour. I was just like, yes, welcome. What's up?
Come collect your evidence.
Yeah, here's a quote. He was dressed in dirty, wrinkled clothing with visibly dirty fingernails. His lab and office were disgusting. There was literal trash on the floor.
God, no thank you. No thank you.
They literally like, he went, he like showed them his refrigerator and was like, and this is where I keep all of my ingredients for the shot. It's literally just like his lunch next to human placenta under jars of animal blood.
Oh my God.
And then like water for the people there. Like literally they're just keeping their supplies for their shots like in their staff room fridge.
Oh my God.
And he's like, yes, look, I'm amazing. And the reporters were just like, is he fucking serious?
Like, are you kidding me right now?
They probably thought they were being gaslit. They're like, wait, you're happy about this? What? After their visit, the New York Times runs a huge expose on everything going on. They've got the conversations with Harvey Mann. They've got their own investigators who were just given a fucking tour by this crazy, dirty old man. Up until 1972, when this happens, each state had like a medical society and a professional association who would like oversee everything. And they were supposed to police their doctors. Once all of this shit with Max Jacobson came to a head, everyone was like, okay, we need to pause for a second and figure out how the fuck this just happened. Because shit like this is not supposed to be able to happen. So New York compiles a group of a five doctor panel, and over a course of 14 months, including 4,000 pages of testimony from 90 plus witnesses of either current or former patients and their loved ones, they go through everything and figure out exactly what the fuck went down. Here's what I could get access to. Through the hearing, they learned that 90% of the patients were also self-injecting. So there is no formal record of how much each patient was getting. For 2 years in the early 60s and another two in the mid 60s, his office used an average of 1,920 needles a week.
Holy shit.
Oh, here it is. And 2-year-old placenta was found in the fridge next to bread, sandwiches, batteries, and various other lunch components.
2-year-old. That must have been disgusting.
So people are being shot up with human placenta that is years old. No one knows how. Like,
kept in a mini fridge next to the lunch.
Mm-hmm. And the doctors are just like, oh my God. Like, the panel is listening to all of this as 90 plus people, the loved ones of Bob Cummings who come forward. All of these people are like, yeah, my loved one died just unexpectedly for no reason. And these people are just are blown away. They were only able to charge him with 48 counts of unprofessional conduct and 48 counts of fraud.
I mean, I feel like that's still a lot.
Oh, he never went to jail.
Oh, like
he lost his medical license and that's it.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's it. He had 90 plus patients and practiced for 30 years and was only charged with 48 counts of unprofessional conduct. He should have been charged for every person he saw every day.
Oh, yeah. This man should be in jail.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Everything about that was criminal.
Where's the CDC?
I wish people could see your face because you just glitched out so hard.
Where is the CDC?
Where you at?
Where did the placenta come from?
Who's fucking placenta?
Right?
Whose placenta was it?
We don't know. That's why I'm like, wait, I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, so he was charged with 48 counts of unprofessional conduct and fraud. Okay, what else?
Yeah. Are we just done? Is there not more to the list?
In the aftermath of all of this, almost all states, not all, almost, most states enacted boards of ethics to oversee everything that doctors do. In 1972, Nixon signed the Reorganization Plan 2, which gave us the DEA that Congress obviously approved of. And the official war on drugs begins because it started with a shitty doctor telling his patients it was fine.
God damn it, he ruined it for us cannabis users!
Max closes his office and begins to just casually and secretly see patients in his home.
Come on! And this is why he should have been in jail. Because why was he gonna stop? He's too addicted to doing it.
Yeah, and he makes the shit himself. How is he gonna stop? He's not gonna stop. He attempted to regain his license in 1979.
Yeah, okay.
And the medical board was like, the fuck? Are you kidding me? After what you did? You're also like almost 80, bro. Like, go chill or something.
Go away.
Go.
Leave us alone.
Jacobson died later that year on December 1st in New York City. His funeral was held at the Frank E. Campbell Funeral Chapel in Manhattan on the 3rd of December, and he was buried in the Mount Hebron Cemetery next to his second wife, Nina, which is super fucked up if he actually did kill her. He was also buried next to his parents. Next, I'm going to give you a list of Max Jacobson's known patients.
Ooh.
Andy Warhol, Andy Williams, Billy Wilder, Bob Cummings, Bob Fosse, Cary Grant, Cecil B. DeMille, Chuck Spalding, Claude Pepper, Doris Shapiro, Dorothy McGuire, Eddie Albert, Eddie Fisher, Edie Sedgwick, Elizabeth Taylor, Elvis, Emilio Pucci, who is Marilyn Monroe's favorite designer, the Everly Brothers, Rex Harrison, Frank Sinatra, George Kaufman, Gore Gadol, Gypsy Rose Lee, Harry S. Truman, Hedy Lamarr, Henry and June Miller, Howard Cosseau, Ingrid Bridgman, John and Jackie Kennedy, Jerry Lewis, John Hancock the director, Judith Exner Campbell, Judy Garland, ooh, Catherine Dunham, Kate Thompson, Kurt Brown, Marilyn Monroe, Mark Shaw, Maynard Ferguson, Mickey Mantle, Milton Blackstone, Nancy Olson, Nelson Rockefeller, Patrick O'Neill, Paul Robinson, Peter Lawford, Peter Lawry, Richard M. Nixon, Rita Murano, Rod Sterling, Rosaline Russell, Roscoe Lee Brown, Rosemary Clooney, Sam fucking Giancana, Sharon Tate, Shelley Winters, Spiro Agnew, a vice president, Tennessee Williams, Truman Capote, Van Clymerne, Vic Des Moines, Winston Churchill, and so many more.
Wow, what a list.
Those are literally just the names of people that I recognized.
Yeah.
There are so many more.
Wow. That is wild that that was able to go on for that long.
Yeah.
Wow, Katie.
That is Max Jacobson, Dr. Feelgood, who, for the record, got that name from the CIA, is what they called him, as well as Miracle Max.
Miracle Max had me cracking up. And I know you like that because of the alliteration.
I do. I prefer Miracle Method Max, but
that's... It's extra zesty.
Yeah. And, like, there's one point, and I didn't mention it in this episode because I did talk about it in JFK, where Robert Kennedy, like, comes to his brother and he's like, bro, what the fuck? This is not okay. We ran some tests. This is sketchy shit, and you need to stop.
What are you doing?
And a lot of sources in JFK stuff, like, I think even I said in the JFK episode that we didn't get a report as to what was in the shots. That's not true. They did. The Kennedys like to hide the fact that it is known that JFK was on methamphetamine, not just assumed. So, like, his brother was like, bro, what the fuck are you doing? And JFK was quoted, I don't care if it's horse piss. It's the only thing that works. He didn't give a shit.
It makes you feel good. It makes you feel good.
He was like, I feel great. I can do anything. This is the first time in my life that I've felt great, and I'm not going to stop.
Wow.
Yeah. It's bad, man.
Damn, dude.
It's real bad. So that's Dr. Feelgood.
Thank you, Katie. Whew, that was a wild ride.
A lot. Just, like, understand that doctors, while are amazing, are just people.
Sometimes people do bad things.
People still do bad things. Mm-hmm. So just because someone is like, yeah, I'm a doctor, you can trust me, that's not the same thing. I'm a doctor does not mean you can trust me. And that is what I want to end this episode on. I love people who work in the medical community. They have saved my life, but they are also just people.
Yep. Until next week. Bye.
Okay, bye. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.